Okay, as we said, the question is an old one. But it's a question that anyone who devotes any time, any thought to tefillah, clearly it's a question we have to ask ourselves. Given the centrality of bakasha in our tefillot, which is clear, one opens a siddur, and looks, one learns the sugyot in brachot, in Megillah, Pule, it's very clear. There's a way tefillah is described. How does bakasha work? Hashem already knows what we want, what we need. The facts are the facts, whether it's in terms of what we deserve, what's in terms of what's good for us, what's in terms of what's going to affect other people, how it's going to affect, what God's plans for things are, all the different infinite factors. How does our tefillah factor into that? How can it possibly make a difference? Rav Yosef Albo, in Sefer Yikarim, Mamar Vi, over the course of a couple of chapters, particularly Perek Yud Chet, suggests an approach which basically requires a little bit of context, but basically can be boiled down to a little more than two words, maybe three words, let's say. Three words. The whole answer of Rav Yosef Albo to this question. What are the three words? What's Rav Yosef Albo's approach? Okay, and so it's what?
Kisharon.
Okay. Okay. There's no one right answer, but I have a different set of three words. What? The way that I think about this, Rav Yosef Albo, and again, it's no more correct, but I'm saying it for a reason. I think it's important to begin to analyze what he says. The basic bottom line, Rav Yosef Albo, is that tefillah equals tshuva. Okay. Is that a fair summary? Now, of course, then you have to ask how that tefillah equals tshuva. Tefillah is really a form of tshuva. Then he has an explanation for how tshuva works to affect things, and that is a famous approach. It's not unique, but it certainly, that I think is very powerful, which is that, and this is where what you people said comes in, that tshuva means that I'm a different person, and being that I'm a different person, therefore a different destiny, a different fate, is appropriate for me. Okay? In terms of tshuva, let's say I have no qualms with what Rav Yosef Albo says. The issue is in terms of his explanation of tefillah. And as I said before we started to prepare, what he says is important and valuable, meaningful, but I find it hard to take this as the whole story, or the final answer, for several reasons. And had a chance to go over Rav Yosef Albo and to think about it. Problems with Rav Yosef Albo, problems with this explanation of tefillah. What are the problems that exist? What are the problems? No one had any problems with this? Yes?
Go ahead.
What?
Why
is that a problem with what he says?
If you doubt it, then it changes the energy of the
tefillah. Okay, but maybe that was the appropriate fate for who you've now become. You know what I'm saying? Let me put it this way. I'm not so concerned at the moment, with the question of when tefillah does not change things. It doesn't, I'm speaking suggestively, but it doesn't bother me per se that tefillah isn't an automatic process, but or, a guaranteed, in terms of result. What bothers me is why it can work ever. But, yeah.
Well, we were discussing it, it works for tshuva and everything, but what about bakasha? I mean, if you're asking for a new dog, then what does that do with tshuva?
Okay, so let me paraphrase what you're saying, and you'll tell me if this is what you're getting at. I think this is what you're saying, but I want to make sure that I understand and everyone else understands. one of the things that we have to understand about this equation is, one of the questions I would want to ask Rav Yosef Albo is that what I do when I daven? Is that what I, and let's open up a sitter, look at Shmoneh Esrei, is that what I say? Right? No doubt there's an element of tshuva in tefillah. No doubt. Right? There are, let's say, three brachot. Pachot or yoter, depending on how you understand and define them. But anywhere it's from one to four, where, you know, you can define maybe a little more, maybe less. But there are some brachot that's not what tefillah is. That's not what we do. We don't talk about, in our whole Shema Esrei, we're not talking about what's wrong and what needs to be changed, and right? That's number one. That just doesn't, you know, it's a nice theory, but do the facts really correspond? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's question number one. That's the first question. I have to think that, you know, that well, I'm not satisfied with this. Yes, Aliza. Okay, I would question whether that's necessarily true, that tefillah was established as a replacement karbanot. You look... one of the things that tefillah accomplishes, one of the additional things that it accomplishes post-Horban is a replacement for karbanot. But that's not the essence of tefillah. In other words, it's not ki'ilu, and you know, it's very important to understand this, and it's a very, very common, I think, very common misconception. One of those very prevalent things that you know, because of that Gemara and Brachot about Tfilah Keneged Tzvidim and the idea of, you know, Avinu Neshama Parim Svatein and all that, but it's a misconception. Lehefech, when Shlomo Melch builds the Beit HaMikdash, Melach Mal Parchet, right, what happened, you look at his tefillah, his lengthy tefillah, which he says when he builds the Beit HaMikdash. I should be able to end there, right, but I'll go on. The Tefillah of Shlomo, he talks about what the Beit HaMikdash is going to serve as. He talks about primarily as a place for Tefillah, not a place for Karbanot. My point being that the Beit HaMikdash, from before the first day it opened, the Beit HaMikdash was created to be a place for Tefillah, and aside from the fact that we have Tefillot in, you know, Tanakh, from the, you know, going back to Abraham and, you know, before even, but, you know, certainly from the beginning of the Jewish people, before we need to replace, and while they're karbanot, but the Beit HaMikdash was the Beit Tefillah, Ki Beiti Beit Tefillah Karei L'Chol Amim. It was not just for the Jewish people, for the whole world. And Shlomo Melech talks about people coming, and if they can't come to Beit Mishlodel, Bitpalu Elecha Derech Artzam, and, you know what I'm saying? Lehefech, when the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, then Pasuk says, Satam Tefillati. It's more difficult to daven without a Beit HaMikdash. So I think that assumption has to be looked at.
I'm not sure.
Go ahead.
This is whatever, but I'm a little confused why we're talking in terms of destiny. When do we actually believe that we have a destiny per se? Because we believe in Bechira and we believe in...
I'm saying, if I'm davening for X, right, what Hashem's decree is in terms of that X. I'm davening for, you know, for myself or this person or that person to be well or to, you know, whatever it is. Yeah.
Also, I mean, maybe it's losing a point, but like the main assumption in this whole excerpt was that it's like a bad thing. Like whenever there's a bad Gzeira or whatever, there's something bad happening to us and everything. But, like we don't only daven. I mean, there's an opinion, I forgot which one, Ramban, where it says that, like, wait, sorry, we daven, but like
Ramban.
So we don't only daven. In the reality, we daven every day, and like it's not always bad. And like he's painting a picture that like, we're davening to get this bad Gzeira away, and we change our style, and then it's gone. But like,
right?
We don't.
I mean, I think that's kind of an example. In other words, it could be that, you know, you can, you know, whatever it is that the need. But he's talking about a need. He's giving an example, maybe. But I don't think that, you know, you have to.
Apply if it's not like, if you're not like a bad person.
Okay, Beseder, but I mean, I think what we need to introduce to explain that is simply, you know, that it's relative. Meaning, okay, maybe it's not because you're, you know, maybe the issue is not that you're a bad person becoming a good person, but a good person becoming a better person. You know what I'm saying? It's just a question of, that's a quantitative difference. Or that the need is not a crisis, but the need is, you know, just a need. You know what I'm saying? But Beseder, yeah, okay, so you didn't ask me quite, but the first problem is, I think, a much, more fundamental one. I have another problem that I have with Rav Yosef Albo, above and beyond what we've discussed so far, and I'm definitely bothered by the question of how this fits with what we do in tefillah. But I have another question. The other question is, if that's really what tefillah is, so first of all, it takes away the unique aspect of tefillah, certainly, right? At least on this level. In other words, we have tshuva. Why we need, there's another tshuva. Why would, there are, this tzaka, right? There's tzaka, there's tefillah, and there's tshuva, and there are each mavim ra'or gzeilah. They're different things. It doesn't mean there's a common ground, but to reduce it simply to tshuva. So why do we daven at all? Why don't we just do tshuva, right? Why don't we just do tshuva? There, we have a formula for tshuva, right? And then, so why is there hilchot tefillah and hilchot tshuva? Why? What is unique and special about, which is somewhat related to the first question, but I think it's an independent question. The third question I have is, along the lines of the first, why do we, by davening, so I've changed myself, but, so why don't I just do another mitzvah, or, whatever the case may be. You know what I'm saying? In other words, just a question of changing the facts in terms of how I'm being judged. It would seem that there are, so many avenues available. What is it that tefillah is doing? It seems somehow I don't feel like it fully addresses what tefillah is and how it works in this way. So I'd like to leave that question on the back burner and address a different question. Okay? Because if you don't have an answer for one question, you might as well change the subject, right? No, this is very relevant. This is very relevant. But I'd like to look at another Gemara. A Gemara in Brachot, a very famous Gemara. It's a beautiful Gemara, but the question is, what does it mean? Darash Rabbi Avira. Zimrim Amar Lamishmei D'Rabbi Ami. Zimrim Amar Lamishmei D'Rabbi Asi. Okay, so Rabbi Avira would be Darash the following, in the name of Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi, and it goes as follows. Amru Malachei Asharet Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribono Shel Olam. Katub b'toratcha shalu yisa panim v'lo yikach shocha. V'halo atanos panim l'Yisrael d'chtiv yisa Hashem panav elecha. Basically, Gemara says there's a stira, right? Malachi Asharit asks the following question. There's a stira between two psukim. On the one hand, it says that Hashem is not partial, that Hashem is, does things with complete justice. Asher lo yisaf anim v'lo yikaf shochad. Hashem doesn't take shochad of and Gemara discusses what kind of shochad, whatever, is not important, but not important for us, I mean, at the moment. Asher lo yisaf anim, God doesn't show favoritism. God is fair, God doesn't show favoritism. But it says, yisa Hashem panav elecha, Hashem will show favoritism to you. That's part of the bracha bircha kohanim, yisa Hashem panav elecha. So what does it mean, asher lo yisaf anim? So the Gemara gives an answer. Amar lahem, Hashem responds to Malachi Asharei. Isn't it appropriate? Isn't it fair that I do that? Shekatavti lahem betorah v'achalta v'savata v'rata t'shem elokecha. After all, I wrote in my Torah that you have to say a bracha if you are full. V'achalta v'savata v'rata. V'heim medakdikim al atzmam ad kizayit v'ad kabeitza. And we take it upon ourselves to say Birkat HaMazon, even if we only eat a kazayit or a kabeitza. Again, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Okay. A kazayit or a kabeitza. Now, this Gemara leaves me puzzled. I want to ask a very simple question. I want to ask a very, very simple question. Mimanashach. Okay, Mimanashach. This, let's not get bogged down on the exact terminology, but I just want to put it, in just very simple terms, maybe. This, let's call it, and I know this is the wrong word, but let's say this, just because I don't have a better term for it, it's the wrong term, but I can't think of a better one right now. Let's say this mitzvah, and the point is that's not a mitzvah, but this mitzvah, let's say, this good thing, whatever you want to call it, this positive action of Bnei Yisrael that we take upon us, that we say Birkat HaMazon, even though we only ate a kazayit, okay? Now, let's say that has a certain value, okay, in the spiritual world of, you know, of schar va'onish has a certain value. Certain value. It's deserving of a certain credit, a certain reward. Let's give it a number. Okay, let's give it a number. Let's say the number is X. Okay? Let's call it X. It has a certain value. Hashem treats us with favoritism. Yisah Hashem panam ilecha. That favor that Hashem shows us, let's say that it has a certain magnitude to it, a certain amount, a certain quantity. Let's quantify and let's call it Y. Okay? So we have X and we have Y. Everyone with me so far? Yes? Forgive me for bringing math into the story, but okay. I know people are on vacation this year, and we're talking about enough to make you register for college. Okay, but Kitzur. The point is like this. There are no signs on this door. I'm able to bring up whatever topic I want. It's not like, mention the C word. Okay, anyhow. The point is like this. That I have a very simple question on the Gemara. What's the simple question? Does X equal Y? Or really the question is, does Y equal X? So I want to know, does Y equal X? Very simple question. And I don't understand the Gemara either way. Because if it is equal, if it is proportionate, if the Yisah Hashem Panav Elecha is proportionate to the Hemedaktikim Al Atzmam Ad Kazai Vay Kebeitza, so then I understand which pasuk? I understand Asher Lo Yisah Panim. It's fair. But I don't understand Yisah Hashem Panav Elecha. Where's the favoritism? It's just fair. Right? If it's fair, it's not favoritism. If we're being just rewarded for, okay, so it's like just like there's no kasha why Hashem rewards us for doing mitzvah number one, mitzvah number two, mitzvah number three, there's no kasha why He rewards us for saying Birkat HaMazon on a kazayit or a kabeitza, as long as it's proportionate. On the other hand, if Y does not equal X, if it's out of proportion, if it's not fair, then I understand Yisah Hashem Panav Elecha, but I don't understand Asher Lo Yisah Panim Lo Yikach Shochah. So Mimana Shach. I'm back to my original question. On the one hand it says Asher Lo Yisah Panim, on the other hand it says Yisah Hashem Panav Elecha. I can't have my cake and eat it too, one way or the other. Either Y equals X or Y does not equal X. Is that fair enough? Yes? Okay. I trust everyone was bothered by this. I mean, that's a glaring question. Does this make any sense? Yeah.
Why do they give the example of
Bachal Tavasa Varta? Good question. Why that? What about all the other good things we do? We do much more major things. Why that? Okay, so part of the answer is it's just an example, but what's the nature of that example? The answer, I think, is like this. Don't tell Gil I'm telling you this story. Because now she's all grown up and mature and running half the country and whatever, you know. But, okay. But, as mature as Gila is, once upon a time she was a little kid. Okay. Once upon a time she was a little kid. And when she was about 3 years old, I remember this well. It was Shavuot Tamuz. And we made the horrible mistake of going to, in those days, this goes, Gil was 3 years old, so I'm talking about 14 years ago or so, 15 years ago, whatever, I don't know exactly how old she was then, but about 15 years ago, something like that. Back in those days, you know, if you had a little time off in camp, you went to Kmart. I know nowadays it's Walmart, but in those days it was Kmart. Okay. So, it's before Walmart, undercut Kmart, and got to mount this. Okay, but yeah, so you go to Kmart, and huge store, and Gila was in a very strange mood. May have had something to do with the fact, it didn't have to do with Shavuot Thomas because she wasn't fasting yet, but it probably had something to do with the fact that, you know, like, bringing a three-year-old to this huge store with a million things, I'm not exaggerating when I say that Gila ran around the store, this three-year-old, running around Kmart, picking up random objects. And when I say random objects, I mean random objects. She couldn't have told you what you do with these things. They're like the weirdest. But picking up every object in the store, that she can get her hands on, you know, and I need this, I want this, I need this, and running around like a lunatic, driving us out of our minds. And it's yet Shiva Batamas. Okay. I don't remember why we went to Kmart and Shiva, but for some reason we were there, and for some reason, I don't know, maybe we're out of diapers, I have no idea, but all I know is that Gila's driving us crazy. It happens to be that at that time there was something going on with Gila that we need to do one of these behavior charts, you know, you do, you know, you're good about X, Y, or Z for a week, and you know, fill in all the checks on the box, and then you'll you know, get a prize. Then okay, so I took Gila and I said, you know, it's like trying to stop this major motion machine. I stopped her in one place. I said, Gila, we cannot buy 3,000 items. We can't. But I'm willing to do the following. We're going to pick one thing that you really, really want. You can pick one thing, and if you fill out your behavior chart for a week and you get all your checks for a week, we'll come back to Kmart and we'll get you that one thing. What's the one thing you want to get? And thank God she didn't say something like, you know, a car or something. but she picked this umbrella. There was this umbrella with, you know, like a Disney, you know, one of these kind of whatever. Okay, one of these, you know, kids' umbrellas with all whatever. Okay. She picks that. I said, fine. We're going to work on it for a week. Come back. You get your umbrella. Now, Gila was very good for that whole week. Okay. And she earned her umbrella. And if she hadn't gotten all her checks, she would not have gotten her umbrella. But she did. So she got her umbrella. Okay? However, bear in mind, now that's the end of the story. However, let's use our imagination for a moment. Imagine that there's another smart 3-year-old lurking in the Kmart and comes over to me and says, I'm going to be good for those 7 days also. I also want a Disney umbrella. Well, I will tell you that they would not have gotten the umbrella.
Because they're not your kid.
Because they're not my kid. That's right. You're right. Now, this is an extreme example thing. I don't mean the analogy to be literal. However, my point is like this. I want to give you a more real example. You know, sometimes someone acts a certain way to us, and depending on who they are and what their relationship with us is, we'll relate to that thing that they did, even though it's the same thing, and it has a certain innate significance, but the context matters also. And if it's my good friend who did it, or my best enemy, or something in between, right? It's going to be viewed through a different prism. I'm going to look at it through different lenses. At the same time, within the same relationship, it makes a difference how that person is acting, what they're doing also, but the two factors correlate. There are the facts themselves, and there's the lens through which I'm looking at them, okay? You understand what I'm trying to say here? What I'm suggesting is the following. And this is the key to the Gemara and Brachot, I believe. This is what I think the Pshat is. There are two different dimensions we have to consider. One is, per se, is this person, nation, whatever it is, doing good things, bad things, how many good things, how much, how serious, all the facts. But then there's also the lens through which it's processed. And that's the second factor. Says the Gemara, there are two issues. One issue is that the way Hashem relates to people is fair. It makes a difference in what we do. It makes a difference in who we are and what we are and what we do and this and that. That's one dimension. But there's another dimension. And the other dimension is, if you will, like a meta dimension of how the lens through which Hashem is judging those facts. And that's Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha. In other words, on the one hand, Asher lo yisaf anim v'lo yikach shochad, that everything is fair. It's fair in terms of the basic facts, and it's fair even, says the Gemara, in terms of the lens that's being used. Because there's a reason why one lens or another is being selected. But the lens makes a difference. So Hashem says to Malachi Asharit in the Gemara, what does Hashem say here? V'chilo asal lehem panim liYisrael, meaning, it's true that the way I judge the actions of Bnei Yisrael is different. Why is it different? It's different because there's a different relationship. I'll ask, is it fair that there's a different relationship? And the answer the Gemara gives is, yes, it's fair that there's a different relationship. Because after all, Hashem relates to us not through a mode of din, not through a mode of cold objectivity, but a mode of rachamim, a mode of relationship. Why is that fair? Because after all, shekatavti lahem b'torah v'achalta v'savata v'rata Hashem elokecha. The Torah tells us that God demands of us that we say birkat hamazon, we say a bracha if we're soveya. That's what God demands of us. If we were to relate to God on a level of din, on a level of cold objectivity, that, well, I'm created by God, I have to do what God tells me to do, God told me to do this, so I have to do this. Would I say birkat hamazon on a kazayit? No, I have no obligation. God said, v'achalt v'savat v'rachta. That's not how Bnei Yisrael relate to Hashem. Bnei Yisrael relate to Hashem that we want to say the bracha, that we want to obligate ourselves in it, that we're not relating to Hashem through a mode of din, but through a mode of rachm, through a mode of relationship. That we don't, it's not just that God's our master, our king, and we do is relate to God as Avinu Malkeinu, as the Dod, as there's a different relationship. And therefore the Gemara says it's fair that Hashem relates to us through a mode of relationship and judges the facts based on a different prism, because after all, that's how we relate to Hashem. V'chilo esal hem panim liYisrael, shekatavti lehem b'torah v'chal tzvat v'rachta Hashem elokecha, v'heim medaktim l'atzmam akazayit v'akabeitza. There are two factors. There are two dimensions. So I'd like to go one step further. Okay, just one step further, and then I think we'll understand, well, maybe two steps further. But anyhow, yes?
How does God not call to us about to show how we relate to Hashem?
Because it's saying that if we were to relate to Hashem in a purely mechanical way, in a purely objective, just, you know, no relationship, just God's the boss, and we have to do what He says. Yes, sir. So that means that if the Torah says, if Hashem tells us in His Torah, V'achal to Mitzvah Rachta, so when are we going to bench? But no, we take it upon ourselves and say, no, we want to do more. Clearly, that shows that we are choosing to have a relationship with us. I want to thank Hashem, even though there's no obligation to do so. I'm relating not in a mode of, just in terms of, you know, carrying out obligation, in terms of din, in terms of cold objectivity, in terms of relationship. So Hashem says, I'm going to reciprocate. That's Yisa Hashem Panavilech. Okay, I'd like to go a step further. Gemara says in Bracha, the Chafav and Bet. Yitzchak tikein tefilat mincha, sh'ne'emar v'yitzei Yitzchak lasuach basadeh lefnot arev. Ve'ein sicha ela tefila, sh'ne'emar tefila lani ki ya'tov lefnei Hashem yishpoch sicha. One of the ways that Chazal described tefila is sicha. Sicha means dialogue, conversation, communication. And I think that we have here a very deep point. It's a very simple point, a beautiful point, but a very deep point. This is the essence, I believe, of tefillah and how it works. The bedrock of a true relationship is communication. If we think about who are our closest friends. Our closest friends are the people with whom we share our hopes and fears, the things that we're very upset about, the things we're very happy about, the things that are very important to us, the things that are going on in our lives. Right? That's I think, as good a definition as any of, or certainly at least a symptom of who, and not just a symptom, it's also a cause. Right? When we share with someone else things that are very, very important to us, that deepens and strengthens the relationship that we have with them. It's hard to imagine, you know, having someone who you consider to be your very close friend and, you know, who is, you know, you have a very strong and important and deep relationship with, who you don't share what's important to you with, right? That's I think, contradiction terms. Says the Gemara, what do we do when we daven? We daven, we turn to Hashem, and we talk to Hashem, communicate with Hashem about what we need, what we want, what we're happy about, what we're upset about. Bakasha and Hodah. What we do in tefillah is sicha. It's communication. It's dialogue. It's obviously different than a dialogue with a human being. It goes without saying. But on the level of relationship between man and God, that's what tefillah is. It's talking to Hashem. And it's talking to Hashem about our needs, our desires, our fears, our hopes, and so on and so forth. Ein tefillah l'sicha. Shenemar tefillah l'ani ki atov l'fnei Hashem yishpoch sicha. We pour out our dialogue, our what's in our hearts, what's on our minds before Hashem. That's tefillah. And I think that this is how we can take what Rav Yosef Albo says, but perhaps take it a little bit further. When I daven to Hashem, I really daven to Hashem, what I'm doing is I'm talking, I'm communicating, I'm sharing what's in my heart, and thereby, what am I doing? I'm strengthening and deepening the relationship. And to the degree that I strengthen and deepen the relationship, it's not that the facts change. It's not that and I'm taking this as only a piece of the story. I don't mean that this is the whole story. But it's not that when I daven, contrary to what Rabbi Yosef Albo says, I would suggest, it's not per se that my score, if you will, in terms of my mitzvot and averot, and that changes. The facts are the facts. And if I want to change those facts, then there are things I can do. I can do more mitzvot, I can do tshuva, I can, you know, there are things I can do to address the basic facts of who I am and what I am and what I've done, etc. I don't think that's what tefillah does. And what I'm saying is not contradictory to Rav Yosef Albo, but I think it's a version or a you know, in any case, I think that it's parallel to, but I would say it a little differently. That it's not identical to tshuva, in that tshuva addresses who I am and what I am and what I've done and what I will do. In a word, the facts. That dimension of the issue. But the process of tefillah addresses the other dimension, the dimension of Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha, the dimension of the relationship that I have with Hashem. And that by doing that, even if the basic facts aren't changed, but the way that Hashem relates to those facts and relates to me given those facts, arguably could change. And therefore, with it, what the appropriate response to the situation is as well on the part of Hashem. I want to add just one more point to what I just said. Just one more point. Very, very briefly. And that is to address for a moment, I think it's a very important idea. I think that what we just said sheds light on how the process of tefillah works for myself. When I'm davening for myself. Question is, what about when I'm davening for someone else? What if the person whose health I'm asking for is not my own, but someone else's? So I wanted to share with you a perspective for a moment that I think may be at least begin to help with this kind of follow-up question, if you will. And that's the following. It's a beautiful she'iltot. Beautiful she'iltot. It's pointed out by the Netziv in his commentary on the she'iltot, one of the classical works from the Netziv. On the she'iltot says as follows. He points out that there's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, but Tosa and the she'iltot understand it, have a little bit of a different version in it, and explain it a little bit differently. And what he says based on the Shilta is the following. Gemara Rosh Hashanah says that there is a... Again, I'll give you the version of the Gemara based on the Shiltot as explained by the Nitziv. And then build on it for a moment. Gemara Rosh Hashanah says that there's a difference between a gzera that is on the Yachid or a gzera that's on the Tzibur. In terms of what it takes to cancel an already existing gzera, there's a difference whether we're talking about the Tzibur or the Yachid. Okay, details are not relevant for us at the moment, but that's the basic thrust of the Gemara and the first parak Rosh Hashanah. Then go on to give an example. What's an example of a tefillah that is in response to, or that is a reaction to a gzera on the, follow carefully, a gzera on the Yachid. So according to the Shiltot, the example is as follows. Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah after Chayte Ego. Okay. So we'll ask, okay, Adkan is the Shilta. Now, let's say the Shilta. What do you mean? But it was a gzera on Am Yisrael. So Hashem was going to destroy Am Yisrael. What the Shilta in effect is saying is something very, very powerful, very deep. Saying, how can Moshe daven for Am Yisrael? I understand how he can daven, how they can daven for themselves. How can he daven for them? And there's a question on Rabbi Yosef Albo. It's a question on what we suggested. How can you daven for someone else? How does it work? So you change yourself, or you change your relationship with Hashem. But how does that affect what's going to happen to Moshe Rabbeinu? Wasn't the one who did Chet HaEgel, he wasn't there, and he wasn't the one who was being threatened. The Gzer wasn't against him. The answer is, again, a simple point, but not such a simple point. How can Moshe daven for Am Yisrael? Because Moshe goes to Akash Baruch Hu and says, you can't do this to me. You can't kill out Am Yisrael. You can't do... I can't exist without Am Yisrael. You're going to destroy my nation. That's a terrible thing to do to me. Meaning, the foundation of a tefillah for someone else is an aspect of empathy, aspect that it affects me. That if I'm davening for my X, Y, or Z, for a relative, my friend, it's because... it impacts me, so I can daven for it, because it's destroying Am Yisrael's gzera on Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's why Moshe is able to, the degree that he's able to relate to what happens to Am Yisrael as being gzera on him, that's why his tefillah is so effective for Am Yisrael. It says something about Moshe Rabbeinu, it says something about tefillah, and I think it's a very, very important and powerful point. I think that it's an important supplement to any analysis of how tefillah is going to work, whether we take the approach of Rabbi Yosef Albo, or whether we take the approach that I suggested here based on the Gemara in Brachot, two Gemaras in Brachot. In any case, I think it's a very important perspective on tefillah and how it works. I believe that the advantage of saying it the way that I want it to, based on the Gemara in Brachot, the Gemaras in Brachot, is that it explains the unique aspect of tefillah. It relates to what we actually do when we daven, and what the text of tefillah actually is. For that, those reasons and others, I think that it's taking what Rabbi Yosef Albo says, perhaps a step further, and in helping us to understand what tefillah is. In any case, I think that's important food for thought, and so much more to say, but. For now. Okay. Have a good day, everyone. Shabbat shalom.